Thank you to the sponsor of today's podcast, Call of Dragons. Call of Dragons is an original, immersive, and epic fantasy world. Taking place in the world known as Tamaris, team up with the elves, orcs, celestials, goblins, and countless other magical creatures to build your vast army. Dive into your own fantasy city with unique decor for each faction. Arrange your city as you see fit and build the unique fantasy metropolis of your dreams. Once you leave the safety of your own city, prepare for battle alongside your scary but friendly behemoth. Command your behemoth to aid you in battle with a variety of epic behemoths are scattered across Tamaris. Powerful giant bears, venomous hydras, lightning-fast thunder rocks, and terrifying flame dragons. Work together with your alliance to defeat them and bring them under your command, then unleash them in battle. And please don't forget to name them. Train up your heroes with unique skills that can turn the tide of battle in an instant. Unleash powerful abilities to wipe out your opponents with a huge array of equipable magical artifacts, each with their own unique skills. Turn invisible, move at astounding speed, teleport or heal your units in an instant. Equip your heroes with an artifact that suits their abilities and unleash artifact skills to dominate the battlefield. Call of Dragons has true 3D terrain that shapes the gameplay. Tamaris is a land of mountains, rivers, valleys, tundra, and countless other features. Not only is it beautiful, it's also essential to use your terrain to your advantage. Build your city on a plateau to make yourself impervious to attack. Set up an ambush in a mountain valley to wipe out enemy forces, or occupy the high ground and cut all would-be invaders down to size. And that's just scratching the surface. In Call of Dragons, combat isn't just a matter of numbers. With the right strategy, you can turn any situation to your advantage. All these features come together to create an incredible fantasy battle experience that allows you to wage war your way. So, if you're ready to jump into the fantasy world of Tamaris, download Call of Dragons today on PC or mobile by using my link in the description.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
What is your second wind idea that you have?
I've been trolling across TikTok for all the new hot trends and trying to keep up with Gen Alpha.
One of the things we love about you.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm so hip.
I'm concerned, but
and what I don't know if this is just because I'm on a certain part of the algorithm seeing this, but it seems like a large amount of people are going to like all you can eat or like. Everyone chips in on meat grilling type restaurants. Mm-hmm. Why can't I think of what you'd call like a Korean barbecue place?
A Korean barbecue place.
And they all have a dish that these young youths will enjoy where it is like, hey, here's the raw meat that you're about to put on the grill, mm-hmm. but it's being served to you on like a Barbie doll.
What?
Or like a plastic skeleton that is wearing
what?
Wearing the food like a shirt.
Like a charcuterie.
Like bacon draped over a doll so that you're wearing the meat and then you take it off with chopsticks and you put it on the grill.
What?
That's Buffalo Bill shit.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, this is practice.
Not only is it practice for serial killers, it is a laser-guided missile into my fear heart, which is... Chad is always worried that there's plastic stuff in his food. I'm sure I've shared this on the podcast.
Yes.
Chad, worry no more. There is plastic stuff in your food.
But like, okay, but I've accepted microplastics.
Yeah.
But like little Lego pieces that maybe came into my cereal because there was a mix-up at the factory and the cereal chute got mixed up with the Lego pieces chute. Now I'm eating Legos. Constant fear. Yeah. Constant fear.
Can I drill down on this fear real quick with
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
What is the big part of the fear? Is it that you will chew plastic, or is it that you will swallow plastic? Like, what's your biggest part of the fear?
I don't even get to the point of like, oh, I'll choke in the fear. It is just mm-hmm. how unnatural and how gross would it be if suddenly little pieces okay. of plastic toys were in my mouth.
That's all it is?
Well, I mean, I don't want to eat it either. I don't want to swallow it, but just like, like, I have very vivid memories of like eating a bowl of cereal on a Saturday morning, and then a commercial for like Polly Pocket or Mad Max, sure. if you will, mm-hmm. Mighty Max mm-hmm. comes mm-hmm. on, and they show those little tiny plastic toys, and I go, "Ah, get yeah. this cereal away from me! There could be Mighty Max in it."
If I drove to your house and filled a cereal box with little Lego heads, it would be the worst thing that could happen to you.
Yeah, worst thing, absolute worst thing. And these kids eating off of Barbie dolls this Barbie has like a silicone hair. Right? Like, it's got synthetic hair.
It's not real hair. Ugh. They're not getting donated hair for these Barbies. That's silicone hair.
They're taking it.
Or maybe they are taking it. That's a good point.
That's Mattel's big secret, is they, like, kidnap people and steal their hair.
Chad, I've got a solution for you.
Yeah.
You ready for this?
Yeah, please.
The only thing you have to fear, besides fear itself, is plastic being chewed and becoming like more microplastics for your body, which, let's yeah. face it, that's everywhere. You're dealing with that part already.
Yeah, right now I'm breathing in microplastics.
So my solution for you, no longer chew any food. and if you just swallow everything whole. And then that way, any plastic that does enter you will just exit you through the normal apparatus of exiting your body, and you don't have to worry about anything.
So, are you telling me like gaseous or liquid forms of plastic?
You gotta write those ones off.
Okay,
those are in you. Fear solved.
I love Paul solving fears for us.
We could start a new podcast where I solve fears. I'm yeah. down for that.
Paul, I've got a fear of skunks.
Oh boy. Okay, I'm gonna need some time for that one.
Okay.
What part of the skunk?
Yeah,
should. Is it the black and white colors? Is it the Pepe Le Pew is going to come on too strong?
Yeah,
to
the
you?
Romanticism. What?
I don't want to be sprayed by a skunk, but I'd like to pet a skunk.
Hmm. Oh, you fear how much you love them.
Yeah.
What if I could sell you, Kevin? Because you know my fear has been fixed now. Thank you, Paul. I never will feel feel fear again. What if I could sell you, Kevin, a little special dart gun that shoots like a web perfectly at a skunk's gland hole?
What?
Like,
is it that like, visible?
Like, it's, I don't know, I assume. Like, it's like a Spider-Man web that like lasts for 8 to 9 seconds, 8 to 9 hours, and you can, like, shoot it at
the
gland
hole. Is a skunk
hole,
like a video game boss with, like, a big red stink ball
glowing red?
You wait for it to flash its spot, and then you're like, gotta hit it.
I was gonna propose skunk diaper, but sure. Let's go with gland net gun.
And it only lasts 8 or 9 hours, and it dissolves naturally, no environmental impact, so the skunk can get back to its normal life after you're gone and petting it.
Fear solved.
I think the skunk diaper is a little more feasible, but that could also be attached to some sort of gun apparatus, because I like that part.
Yeah, how are you gonna put the diaper on the skunk, Kyle?
Well, I think it requires someone to get glanded. So, I mean, I just accept that fate. Much like how you have to accept that you're swallowing plastics at all times, yeah. I just have to accept a gland.
Yeah, there are trade-offs to solving a fear, Chad.
Yeah,
sure.
There's always trade-offs.
Also, yeah, you have to let some of the evil inside you.
I feel emboldened now. I think I can go on with my day, and if I met a skunk.
I've got to catch. This fear has passed. That's going to be the catchphrase for the show.
Kyle, are there any fears we can save you from in your life?
Yeah, what does this solve any fears, Kyle?
Oh, no. Nothing that you guys can save me from.
Well,
give us a shot.
Come on.
We're
pretty good at this.
All right. This feels
pretty good.
We're
2 for 2, Kyle.
I am terrified of slamming my hand in a car door.
Okay.
That is the thing that I'm terrified of.
Okay.
Okay.
Have you considered riding a dangerous motorcycle?
Now that's a good idea.
No doors.
I don't hate this.
No doors on that.
No.
I was thinking of similarly, not a motorcycle, because Kevin, you shouldn't ride a motorcycle. It's too dangerous. We need you safe, buddy. But what if you had a car and you removed all the doors from it?
That's a cool, that's actually a sick, that's like a Mad Max car is what you're saying.
Yeah, like a Mad Max car. Yeah. You can kind of just do the thing where you like let the car peel out and you just step out of it while it's still peeling out.
Mm-hmm. This is obviously very appealing to me. I mean, this we live cool. in LA. I mean, the weather usually is good enough to where I could take all the doors off and it'd be okay.
I've got a backup one. I've got these skunk, yeah. I've got the skunk diapers plan.
Oh, sure. Good.
Okay. For your fear. Have you thought about balloon or fake hands that you use for everything?
Okay, so that was, I was wondering when we were going to get to the replace my hand solution.
I am the Occam's razor of fear solving on this show. Yeah. I go for the most obvious solution.
I don't hate the idea of going to a doctor and being like, replace my hands with mannequin hands so I never feel pain again.
Wait, it's a permanent, I thought it was like a one time you just put on like a pad, like you put on like sock and boppers. You're talking about replacing your
hands.
We
live in a capitalist society, Chad. We need to be able to sell more hands.
My question to you is, why stop at the hands? Why not get Kyle a whole new cyborg body that feels no pain, feels no love? Only knows destruction.
And cannot be sprayed by skunk gland.
Yeah.
Can be, but it doesn't matter. Because I have a slick rubber body that wicks away the gland spray.
Who even needs a car at that point? We'll get you a cannon that can shoot you anywhere because your body cannot be destroyed.
I should be able to turn into a car.
Go to a Ripper doc and ask for the way to be able to pet skunks and also not feel pain in my hands.
These are good plans.
Oh, I gotcha, mate. I know exactly what to do. Chuv, whatever they call them.
Choom.
Choom.
It's a bummer no one played that game and knows what you're talking about.
I only watched the anime. I don't even play the game.
These are great plans. This fear has passed.
Paul, I just picture your like superimposed head over wherever that happens. You just come in and fade.
Just put it on Dr. Phil's body.
Finally, Dr. Phil will be useful for something.
Wait, but Paul has passed all of our fears, but...
Can he confront his own?
My only fear is not solving every fear.
Well...
Damn.
Eventually that fear will pass when we're all cyborg men, being shot out of cannons to our next destination.
My job will be complete then.
But until then, you're kind of more of like a Blade daywalker where you're fixing other people's lives, but you can't take care of your own.
It keeps me motivated, yes, Chad.
Wow.
It's not like a vampire Blade at all, but I don't know why I just went to that.
Which means, listener, if you are currently not a cyborg that is clean of your meat body, then you're causing Paul fear by being vulnerable yourself. So you know what you gotta do.
Please stop.
Become a cyborg, or at least like leave your mortal body, your physical body,
or at least Photoshop a picture of yourself as a cyborg and send it to Paul so he feels better about
it. At least lie to me.
Yeah,
this fear has passed.
This fear has passed.
This fear has passed.
This fear will pass.
Oh.
Welcome to Goosebuds.
Yeah, welcome to Goosebuds. I'm Kevin.
I'm Chad.
I'm Paul.
And we are joined by a returning guest. He hasn't been here for a long, long time, but he's back to cover Goosebumps and R.L. Stine books with us. Well, Fear Street book today. Kyle McVeigh. Welcome, Kyle.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. It feels good to be back.
Welcome back, Kyle.
Welcome back, Kyle.
Thank you.
What did we get Kyle for last time?
It's been like 6 years.
Oh, my God. So... It was like pre-pandemic for sure.
Oh, wait. I feel like it was like 2016 or something. I did it early. Did I do the Haunted Mask?
Kyle, you did the Haunted Mask.
Yeah. Wow.
You did an early classic, iconic book. So we brought you back for another iconic story.
Of that.
Fear Streets, the surprise party.
We're about to make this book iconic today.
All I could think as I was reading it, and I don't know if you guys want to jump in immediately, but I was like, is this the most milquetoast nothing hook for like a goose, because it feels like RL was like, I gotta write a taut thriller and with no other hook, really. Like, there's nothing, you know, no creepy dolls, no haunted anything, really.
From my perspective, this is a Barbie doll absolutely covered in bacon.
Is that good?
Like, this has some meat on it, like, compared to the average Goosebumps.
Okay, that's fair, but I want to go back to Kyle's taut thriller. I think he thought that he needed to write a taut thriller and then proceeded to do the opposite.
I agree that RL wanted to write a taut book. Boy, I love using the word taut.
Yeah.
And he had, like, two cool chapters, and the rest is like, I think it's going to be about kids talking to each other around lockers. I think it's going to be mostly that.
This is... 85% water, aka children talking to each other about how good they look right now.
Oh my god, they love complimenting each other's looks.
They all look so good.
Oh, I was gonna ask, I also got really confused, and I was like, when does this take place? Because all of their references yeah. for actors and actresses are like mid-80s?
Yes.
It's very odd.
This book was published in 1989.
Okay.
Whoa. So I guess Daryl Hannah as a reference point could hit a little bit more. Was Splash yeah. was the 80s, I guess?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. 10? Sure.
Oh yeah, 10. All the regular Fear Street readers love 10.
Blade Runner was out.
Yep. Clearly inspired by that.
Speaking of turning yourself into a cyborg to make Paul feel better.
Mm-hmm, thank you. We do know who R.L. Stine had a crush on, at least.
Daryl Hannah?
Thanks to this book. And Molly Ringwald.
I'm actually okay with more reference points of, it's just that celebrity, okay? As opposed to, I had brown hair, and I wore blue jean overalls, and I like to chew gum.
Don't worry, Chad. He gives us plenty of outfits in this book.
Yeah. He still does. I was going to say, or the main description of Meg, which is that she looks like a child. She has a child face.
Short and smooth person is what I pictured with her. Incredibly smooth. Smooth.
Very smooth.
Recently scrubbed. She's so smooth.
Meg is perhaps like one of the messiest R.L. Stine protagonists ever, and I kind of love her for that.
In my mind, she was Rachel Dratch throughout this entire thing.
She ignores all warning yes. signs that multiple people are trying to kill her because yeah. she is procrastinating on a psych paper.
Meg is so bad at paying attention to any signs of anything going on around her because she throws a party for a girl whose boyfriend was killed with all of the memory in the place where her boyfriend was killed. With all of the people involved in the killed person's life.
Oh my god, I didn't even process the wait, the house and the party is in...
is next door to where he was killed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
No, it's chill.
It's hella chill. It's a good party.
No, we're doing it. First idea, best idea. We said we'd do it. We're doing it. book starts with a bang, at least.
Yeah.
Yep. 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 Mm-hmm.
We get another mystery murderer, their perspective as they do a murder and shoot somebody with a rifle and talking about how easy it was,
yeah.
which is very strange.
It is strange. And we, Kyle, we just started really getting into Fear Street. We've read a couple before, but mm-hmm. we're starting from the beginning again. And so this is the second Fear Street book. And both of them so far have opened with a prologue of the kill happening.
Which I guess is like a good crime procedural. Yeah. Little bit. Kyle, you no, have some that experience makes with sense. That.
Yeah. I was shocked at, I mean, I guess I read Fear Streets growing up, but I don't remember them. I don't remember as many teen deaths or alcoholic dads
yeah.
or relationships going on.
There's some heavy stuff. And there's like sex talk in this, like almost yeah. explicit sex talk.
Almost explicit?
They almost acknowledge that they have sex.
What is the sex talk?
There are kids like doing makeouts to each other at the party, and there's reference yeah, to sure.
there's over the shirt stuff.
There's talk yeah. of dancing horizontally with each other.
Oh yep. yeah.
That's right. Well yeah, Dwayne is a bunch of wee woos, I'll tell you that.
Dwayne
I don't understand his deal at all.
He was a self-hating nerd because he played the Dungeons and Dragons game and yet called everybody else a nerd himself.
Wizards and Dungeons.
I honestly,
Wizards
yeah,
and Dungeons.
Wizards and Dungeons, but also he reads, or him or Brian reads, Dungeon Magazine.
I think they called it Dragon Magazine, I believe.
Yes.
And oh, yes. Which was the actual magazine.
I like that he went through all the trouble of avoiding using Dungeons and Dragons and then accidentally referenced a real thing.
I think this yeah. is interesting that it's coming out in 1989 and it has a lot of the Dungeons and Dragons stuff in it. Because this is right in the middle of the Satanic Panic. Like, this yeah. is right in the middle of,
yep.
you know, D&D is going to turn your kid into a Satanist. It's going to make them kill their friends. Like, that and, like, magic cards and fantasy and anything
yeah.
fun, mm-hmm. metal music.
Yeah, like, uh-huh. I mean, there's definitely a moment where Meg's dad kind of leans into that and he's like, you ain't playing that shit. You ain't. Also, I think that this book would have been infinitely more interesting if it was just about that.
I thought that's where this was going about halfway through.
Me too.
I was getting very excited. I was like, wait, is the surprise party about a party of adventurers?
Oh, that would have been fit. Oh, if it was a surprise Wizards and Dungeons game?
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of was.
I love Brian, the benign Wizards and Dungeons player, the wizard, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I thought for sure they were going to make him the killer.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Brian doesn't have a grasp on reality, right?
Well, no, but that was also my question is I don't think Wizards and Dungeons is tabletop. I think it's more of a LARPing thing is what it feels like.
Right, because they do go to the woods and to a cave to play it constantly.
But we never get to go to the cave.
We didn't go to the cave. I know, I was so excited. I
never see it played.
I think it's because RL had no idea what Dungeons and Dragons was.
Absolutely.
Did not bother to do any research for it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's probably for the best. We've seen what happens when he tries to make up like a Magic the Gathering or a Dungeons and Dragons and Goosebumps.
Oh yeah, it's broken as hell and not in any way game tested.
Does not stand up to scrutiny.
There's no play testing happening.
So Brian is... I guess in this friend circle, he's not even in the friend circle. He's just a kid at school they know.
He's Meg's cousin.
Do you guys want me to run down like the major players?
There are so many kids. Yeah. Please, Kevin, if you could do it.
All right. So in order of appearance, we have Meg, our protagonist. We have Shannon, who is Meg's friend. We'll say best active friend.
Yeah.
Okay. Shannon looks like Molly Ringwald. Shannon.
No, Shannon. Or Shannon's Daryl Hannah, I believe. No, wait. I'm sorry.
Ellen's Daryl.
I apologize.
No, Paul. Shannon's Molly Ringwald.
There are so many teenagers in this. I had a hard time.
I know, and they keep adding them.
Yeah.
I made a web of character relationships. It sucks. I had to do it. Shannon is related to Evan. Evan is Shannon's brother. Evan got shot in the opening chapter.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Everything that happens is going to revolve around Evan in some way or another.
Center of the web.
If I can add, in your web, despite us having a cold open where we see a man get shot willingly.
Willingly?
Willingly.
Willingly. I mean, someone chooses to shoot a man that we're presuming to be Evan, right? It's written from the shooter's perspective.
Sure.
Yes.
And Chad, that you actually, it's funny that you said that because it is very important that we say that they willingly shot somebody. That is a very good point.
They willingly shot someone. That's true.
Yeah, that's a big point. That's a big plot point.
But despite that cold open, we are then told about, Evan died in the woods.
They think it's a suicide. They say later.
Everyone assumes it's a hunting accident. He fell on his gun.
Yeah, was what they said later on. I think that was the thought, which is crazy.
Yes.
We're not going to look into that anymore. It wasn't a suicide. Yeah,
Ellen, his girlfriend went out after him because he was like, I'm going into Fear Street Woods. I better bring my gun because it's Fear Street Woods. And then found him tripped over a vine with the gunshot, implying that I guess he like fell on his gun.
Right.
We are not even an inch into the character web.
Sorry, yes, okay. Just want to clarify.
Meg is dating Tony. Tony is poor and is a dad as an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. Therefore, Tony is bad. Is what RL is trying to say. Tony is disadvantaged, therefore he's the worst person in the entire world.
I mean, he could be a little bit more chipper, couldn't he?
He's gonna pull himself up from his bootstraps. He's gotta be a little more cheery.
I felt so betrayed by Tony, and we'll get into why later, but I was really pulling for him.
I hated Tony out the gate. I fell for RL's trick. I immediately hate. I was like, this kid's a little bitch. And then even as they started to reveal his tragic backstory, I was still like, Tony's still kind of a bitch, isn't he?
I mean, his toxic anger was automatically a red flag for me.
Tony is best friends with Evan, who is dead. So Tony has no friends.
Yeah, which is maybe why he's such an asshole.
Maybe.
Is Tony the one that has the pool cue fight?
Yeah.
Yes. Which I think is like maybe the best scene in this whole book.
when Tony gets beat the fuck up,
he gets beamed. He gets beamed real hard.
Shannon is somehow involved with Dwayne, who is the worst person in the entire world.
Yeah.
It's implied in the opening conversation that they are doing some version of dating, but really Dwayne is a sex pest and we all hate him.
Yeah.
He's the worst. Yeah. Dwayne plays Wizards and Dungeons with Brian, who is Meg's cousin. Brian is also the one who found Evan, quotes, in the woods when he was accidentally shot by no one.
Amazing.
Ellen is Meg's best friend. Ellen is Evan's girlfriend.
Ex-girlfriend.
The late Evan's girlfriend.
Yes. Ellen, basically she's out of the picture. She is the friend that they are going to surprise at the party, but she's not really around this. She's the one who looks like whatever the fuck.
Daryl Hannah.
Daryl Hannah.
Yeah. Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Yeah. And
those names are similar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exact same.
Yeah. Wait. Look the same. Same person.
Daryl Hannah's a guy?
I don't know.
He's a basketball player.
I'm not going to Google. I'm not going to look. Just because RL chose to put in a dated reference, I'm going to go the extra mile.
Ellen is a 6'7 point guard.
And then there's Lisa and Corey, who are in sort of a tsundere kind of relationship, and they don't really have much impact.
Our former protagonist from book one, Corey.
Are they? Okay. Uh-huh. That's exciting.
Oh, I didn't realize.
I was wondering, it seemed pointless that they were in this.
Yeah, Corey is the star of book one, and Lisa is his best friend, and at the end of the book, it's implied that they date, and then we see that that didn't go well for them in this book.
Oh, that's that relationship! Oh my god!
Do you guys not remember the scene in the party in this book where he does a handstand, his one trait?
I do remember. Oh, there were multiple people doing it. And we saw, like, Arnie or whatever, another... other dudes from the gymnastic
club. Kyle, just so you know, Corey is basically Spider-Man in the first book.
Amazing.
And Lisa was like the nerdy girl that had feelings for him.
Yeah.
Great. Well, she was kind of goth nerdy. She was more on the goth
end. Yeah. Yeah.
Why did they break up? I was really rooting for them.
They didn't. They're still dating.
They didn't.
They're not happy.
Well, they said they went bad.
They're not happy. I mean, they're still dating.
Yeah, they're making each other miserable, but they haven't broken up.
Okay. Good.
Lisa's just turned over a tsundere kind of leaf where, like, she's always complaining about Corey when he's not there. But then, like, when he shows up, she's like, I love you.
It's toxic.
What? No, it's just.
I'm going to jump in and say, listen, you listener, I'm going to block both of you guys from talking. I'm going to say, listener, you might be like, I want a tsundere girlfriend. No, you don't. No, you don't. You think it's all fun and games. You don't want to have a long term loving relationship with a tsundere girlfriend. They're going to treat you like garbage.
It's
going to
hurt you.
Do it.
Counterpoint, you do, because
okay,
because here's the thing: important part of the tsundere is the dairy. Sun means to move away; dairy means to come closer. The dairy is the important part here.
Okay,
you don't want someone who's too dairy, if you get my meaning.
I think we need Chris Farley Explains Anime, the podcast, as performed by Kevin. That was cool.
We get each other.
You listed a ton of characters. Are you going to get into Mike?
Oh, man. Mike.
Don't forget about Mike.
We learn about later. Mike
Who the fuck is Mike?
Mike is Shannon's half-brother who looks exactly like Evan.
Yes.
And it's really funny that he exists because he is part of the best scene in anything, in fiction.
This book sucks until the last... 10%, in which part it becomes awesome.
Yeah, this book is fine. Like, I'm not gonna say this book sucks.
Well, that's what I mean. Neutral experiences are the worst, Kevin. This book is fine for 90% of it, and then the end of it is actually kind of interesting.
I'm proud of RL for speaking in complete sentences and using a metaphor or a simile or describing an environment here and there. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. I'm happy to see all that. Because you don't get that in Goosebumps.
He actually builds tension a couple times.
Right.
Like doing things from the killer's perspective and then you know, when you do the Tony flip and the fact that we know and Meg's an idiot and somehow doesn't know, like, he's really doing some Alfred Hitchcock shit.
You're going to have to explain what the Tony flip is. We can hold off in a second if we want to. I wasn't sure.
The Tony flip is when we suddenly switch perspectives to Tony from Meg.
But also Tony is, at that point, I think, planning on killing Meg.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's like Meg is walking home from home, and she's like, oh boy, is this surprise party going to happen or what? No one wants me to have the surprise
and
party.
Then cut and then cut to Tony, and he's like, I'm going to throw her off a cliff.
Maybe has a split personality. I don't know.
Something broke in Tony, for sure.
Yeah, he's not doing great. The general like plot thrust, now that we know all the characters, now that we have an iron grip on every single one of these characters.
Yeah.
And their many personality traits.
Listener, I hope you've created your character web at home.
Yes.
I'm not going to show you podcast mine. For a second to make sure that your web is complete.
Send in your webs to... we'll grade them for you.
Send in your webs to goosebuds@gmail.com and we'll tell you if you did a good job.
All right, so Meg, Shannon, and Tony are riding bikes when Shannon's like, guess who's coming back to town? Ellen. Meg's like, no way. We got to throw her a surprise party. Shannon's like, that's a bad idea. Tony's like, ... Meg's like, great. We're all agreed. We're doing it. We're throwing the surprise party. Meg proceeds to get threats. Now we are in the meat of the story.
The vast majority of the story.
Yeah. Yes. And at the beginning of these threats, there's a great moment where she's thinking about horror movies. And I just had to write this quote down. RL on horror movies. How dumb. Girls in those films were either traitors or frightened idiots. What the fuck does he mean by traitors?
Traitors.
What does traitors mean? I don't know. I could not parse his meaning for traitors.
No idea.
Like gender traitors?
Maybe he was just kind of, you know, expressing something for himself.
He does hate women, right? RL, just in general.
Maybe it's like a puritanical thing. Like, oh, these girls, they're traitors. They should keep themselves chaste and pure, but they're drinking at a party and doing horizontal things.
Sure.
Horizontal dancing.
Maybe RL was going through a divorce. We don't know.
We don't know. We could look it up, but we're not going to do that.
Yeah. So he calls all women traitors. And then we get into the meat of what's going on, which really most of the beginning of this is Meg receiving a threat. Tony talking to Tony immediately after, in which Tony says, oh, yeah, the same threat happened to me. We should stop the party. And then she ignores him.
There's even a scene where they both get like a note that that's written in red crayon. Really classy. Yes.
And it says, don't do the party or I will fucking kill you. A friend.
Yeah. And Meg's like, hey, Tony, did you get this wacky note? And Tony immediately takes the note and crumples it up. Tony immediately destroys evidence. And I'm like, all right, Tony, that's a flag.
Yeah,
that's a technical foul.
Don't destroy evidence.
Can I ask the room who all clocked Tony right away? How were we feeling about Tony?
I did not clock Tony. I was fighting for Tony because he was right. Like, Meg should just kind of back off. The surprise party isn't a good idea. Mm-hmm. But until Tony got like really weird about not having the surprise party, I was kind of with him. I was like, yeah, that's not worth getting threats.
I wrote a prediction at the beginning of my notes after the initial things, and I was so close. It was Tony killed Evan because he was in love with Shannon, his sister.
Oh, a little bit off.
I mean, I was wrong in multiple ways, but you know, it was immediately, I was like, oh yeah, Tony, look at this fuck.
Well, Kyle, I think he sniffed it out. It just was that the ending was so bonkers, there was no way to possibly guess it.
No, not at all.
I thought Dwayne being horrible was just to throw us off the scent of things. Yeah. Like, I was like, it couldn't possibly be Dwayne. And I thought it was going to be Brian, because I didn't trust RL to not throw a quiet nerd under the bus.
I was really coming from about halfway through this book. I was so stoked, because I'm like, we're going to go towards some sort of cursed D&D game. This sounds awesome.
So cool.
It's going to be Brian and some sort of, like, and Ellen was part of the group and we didn't know. But early on, I think it's Meg who very nerdishly is writing the full bullet journals down of like things to buy for party, suspects for who could send me things, like, and like reasons why they, like, pretty good motivations. She's actively like thinking through what would these people have.
The only problem is she is thinking about that kind of stuff, but she really backgrounds it to her party planning. Her party planning it takes extreme priority, even though literally every person around her is telling her to stop planning this party.
And also she should be working on her psych paper.
Yeah, what's
up? Yeah. Did she ever finish it? She said it was like 2 weeks late at some point.
I don't know if she ever finished it. We never get that resolution.
Guys, Ellen's coming back to town after months of mourning her dead boyfriend. We need to surprise her.
They're going to like a party every other night.
Yeah. There are multiple parties. I will say though, when Meg is making her like detective inventory in her journal, and she goes through like, I think she says Tony as multiple reasons why Tony would not be a suspect early on. I really like that. And then she gets to like Dwayne. She's like, Dwayne, I hate Dwayne. And then the bell rang, and I was like, that's it. Dwayne's the killer.
Wow,
interesting.
Because she didn't list out any clues for him.
What I liked was when she was listing it out, I was like, oh, Meg is being pretty clever.
Mm-hmm.
And then the issue with her investigation is when she confronts someone and they say no, she's just like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean anything. I hate to imply.
Yeah, when she confronted Shannon, it was really sussy on Shannon's part to react like that. Like, your brother's dead. We get it.
A kid died in the woods and a sad girl's coming back. That's all you really need to know.
Yeah.
So it carries on.
It certainly does.
It just carries on. She
just keeps going.
She goes to lunch and she has a bad lunch, but she always brings a lunch. She's always prepared.
That didn't make any sense.
It was wild. It was so wild because then she opens up her lunch and it's filled with blood and she just kind of doesn't do anything about that. She's like, well, that was weird. And then moves on to reminiscing about the pool cue fight.
But it was red paint. But also no curious, like, oh, is there red paint?
No reaction.
Pays off anywhere.
No reaction. Yeah. She talks to Shannon after and does not mention the red paint lunch bag.
There is actually one cool thing that happens here.
Oh, yeah. What's that?
So she has a little talk with Lisa before she goes over to talk to Shannon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Lisa's living room is described as like cozy and stuff. And it's like very similar, like, I think RL actually looked back at the first book to describe Lisa's exact like living room from the first book. Because like I also remember the squishy couch and the chairs and stuff like that. But it's like, you know, Lisa's very warm and like her living room is very cozy. And then we have a conversation with Shannon, and Shannon's in like this kind of like uptight, stuffy upper class house. And Shannon kind of sucks to talk to. I know her brother's dead, but still.
I like it when RL does a literature like that.
It was one literature.
What rich storytelling and world building he's doing here for Fear Street. Some girls have soft couches, some don't.
Some are traitors, some are not.
Most are, though.
Can we just detail, because so much of this book is random threats. Just trying to remember all of them that happen. Doesn't even have to be in order. Gets a phone call at night.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Classic.
A breathing voice that says, "Don't throw the party, or you're like dead meat."
I think there's a funny meta joke within that one, because she does bring that one up to Lisa, and she's like, "Was it a breathing one?" And she's like, "Nah, it was a whispering one." She's like, "I've only gotten breathing ones," and that was what happened in the first book, where she got a breathing into the phone threat.
Like the continuity is great. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and in Fear Street, in Shadyville, right? Mm-hmm. Shady Side. Yeah. It is a constant. Every woman is threatened in Shady Side all the time.
And also the phone is magic.
Please elaborate, Kevin.
Everything starts with the phone. The phone is always the introduction to the bad things happening.
It's the threshold crossing is what you're saying.
I gotta say, rereading this did make me kind of miss Fort. Technology's great. Love having a smartphone, everything. There's something I kind of miss about, I'm going to pick up this like very detailless plastic can and I can punch in some numbers and then someone's going to hear my voice and they're not going to know who it is. Like there's something kind of cool.
Yeah.
Not that I'd ever start like calling and harassing people.
Yeah.
No. You're just that's kind of what you were describing.
Yeah. You're just saying you can't jerky boys it anymore. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
The art of a prank call is gone.
Yeah.
One point in high school, I got one of these calls. Is in my Jeep Grand Cherokee with my buddies, and we all simultaneously got breathy calls on our cell phones one at a time, and they wouldn't tell us who it was. I still think about it. I'm still haunted by who was that on the phone who called
us. Tony?
Was it Tony? But I'll never know, and that left an impact in my soul.
That's a beautiful mystery that probably runs throughout your art, Chad.
Yeah. Who's the caller?
Cool.
So one time, Evan hit Tony really hard with a pool cue and wouldn't stop until he started bleeding. And then everyone yelled at him.
I was just going to say that I actually really like this scene because it was one of those things. It was very vivid and it definitely makes it clear that Evan was super fucked up.
Yeah.
And like when he accidentally hits Ellen with the pool cue and then he really hurts Tony. I don't know. The description of Tony not realizing he's in a real fight with Evan, I was like, that's 100% a situation I was in as like a teen and a kid.
Yep.
He's sort of like disassociated with reality a little bit in this moment, which was really, which is like, we don't know anything about this character other than these couple stories we're told, but there were, he was certainly not a, he was not a 100% a good person, and everyone around him kind of thought that.
It's strange that Tony is the innocent one in this fight. Because I agree, Kyle, I really like the scene of, it's a misunderstanding of Tony thinks that it's just like a fun, we're just fucking around with pool cues, and Evan's like, I will fucking kill you. It's almost weird that it's not Tony in the other way, because already said Tony is...
But Tony has been acting strange ever since Evan passed away, and we have a very good reason for that.
Okay.
And he may or may not have a split personality. No one knows.
Yeah, Tony's got like a two-faced thing going on.
We also learn a little bit more about Tony's dad.
Yes.
And Tony's... this is how good the economy was in 89, right? So...
Let's hear it.
Tony's dad isn't just like buying Evan Williams from the Packy or anything like that. He's he's going down to the he's walking in his walkable city from his house that he owns to a bar, an establishment, a public house to order his drinks one by one. And that's how he gets drunk. The disposable income that would require these days is immense.
You could be a respectable drunk back then.
Yeah.
You could do it not in front of your family. That's how cheap drinks were and how good the economy was.
The cops would drive you around to any problems that were happening in your life, too, while you were drunk.
Yeah.
A beautiful time.
I wonder why Tony's dad drinks, but that's not really in the purview.
We are not to question that.
Well, because Tony sucks. My kid sucks so much?
What we're not told is that Tony's dad's drinking began when Evan died as well. You're right.
Wow.
Oh, God.
God damn.
The funny thing about you... You brought up a good point in terms of this walkable town. I cannot get a handle on what Shadyside is like. I have no idea.
It's described. Everyone has like either a normal house or like a palatial, like multi-floor finished basement McMansion.
Yeah, who has somebody has like a southern? I think Shannon has a southern plantation house.
Brian lives in a southern plantation.
Oh, Brian does. I'm sorry, that's right.
Yeah, and Tony and his dad live in a row house, like. So, like, I think there are different parts of town. Like, maybe they live closer to, like, the town center where it's more urbanized or something
and
like
probably
that.
Closer to Fear Street, because we are given a little bit of the topography. Not really, like, a clear topography in the first book, but we are told there is a poorer part of Shadyside, which is closer to Fear Street, which is the worst part of town. And then there is a nice side of Shadyside.
Okay.
I don't know if, like, Sunnyvale is a thing or whatever. Not Sunnyvale, that's...
That's Community, right?
No, that's Buffy. That's Buffy. Buffy. Yeah. Yeah, there's like a Sunnyside or whatever in the Fear Street movies.
Yeah, that's the Eagleton to the Pawnee.
That's right. Okay. That's right. Yeah.
I see. I do love that there's a literal Fear Street and that's where all the scary shit is.
It's fantastic.
Great book for me.
The only problem is in these first couple books, there ain't no ghosts. It's just people with guns.
Yeah.
That's too real. I don't like that real horror.
He had to change it up, man.
Well, we have a wizard.
Yeah.
And he does do some wizardry. He does a bit of a cantrip at the end of this.
a minor illusion.
we should start making our way through, because not too much happens other than that, right? So like The biggest incident that happens in this book is most of the way through, as Meg is making her somewhat investigation, but mostly party planning, is she starts talking. And she doesn't talk into Brian yet, but she finds out that Tony and Brian have gone off to play Wizards and Dungeons in the cave that Brian likes to play Wizards and Dungeons in.
And Brian talks like the way Tom Hanks talks in Monsters and Mazes.
I've never seen it, so you're going to have to explain this to me.
Which is another movie about the vilification of Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh,
it's just like you'll lose your grip on reality in Monsters and Mazes. At the end point, Tom Hanks is like believes in the story so much he's going to jump off a building until his friends save him.
Right, Brian calls himself a level 3 wizard in real life.
Yes.
Yeah. So I thought that was like maybe a bit, or like, no, Brian is actually tapping into demonic powers, and he's like, he's not. He just is a sad kid.
We wish, but
he's like, yeah, when I become a level 4 wizard, all will be revealed.
Right. He's committed to the bit. I think that's what is really happening here.
I think that's how he protects himself from Dwayne and Tony, is he pretends to be crazy
keeps him at a distance.
Yeah, because he collaborates with Shannon later and plans like a prank, essentially. So he is all there. I think he's just protecting himself by acting insane so that nobody fucks him up. More than they already have.
Which it fails him here in this scene.
Yeah, we're into woods. Meg gets a call from Tony's drunk dad. He's like, where's my son? It's 4 a.m. And she's like, I don't know, they're in the woods. So Meg gets her dad, who does like a responsible dad thing and goes to the woods with his daughter, but does an irresponsible dad thing and immediately gets separated from his daughter in the woods.
Don't know how that happened. As I was reading it, I was like, how did this happen?
I was thinking the same thing. It was so fast. She saw a raccoon and she chased it, and her dad just let her do that.
Yeah. I mean, he was so sleepy.
He was so sleepy. And you know what? Maybe he just trusts his daughter a little bit.
Yeah, he saw a hollow tree and he's like, I could take a quick nap in here. So
scoot on over, Al.
He did almost let her just go. Like, there was a second where he was like, fuck, I guess I'll go. Fucking whatever.
He's like, I could call out her name. I'm not going to do that.
If she's calling my name, I'm not going to answer.
Hell no.
When Skablamo, a follower, appears behind Meg and breathes onion and french fry breath
into
her nose.
Which is never explained about the onion.
Never again!
I thought that was going to be like the big tell.
Me too.
Makes it in another scene later, and suddenly she's like, I smell onions. Oh no.
Yeah. Where was the onion breath come back? I'm so annoyed by that.
Or she looks under the seat of Tony's car and he's got onion and french fry vodka underneath there or something.
a bag of burger and onion chips.
I was definitely waiting for it to be like a thing where you find out one of them works at Dairy Queen or something.
Yeah, right.
That's like an Encyclopedia Brown thing. Like Encyclopedia Brown, that would be a big fucking deal. With this, it's just kind of creepy.
Encyclopedia Brown, Meg ain't.
No.
No, she's an idiot. And a traitor.
I think every very big
What does that line mean?
Everyone in this book is an idiot and a traitor.
Yeah. RL's nihilism is coming out again, where this is not a universe full of people who deserve to live.
And speaking of not deserving to live, the onion breath shadowy figure tells Meg not to have the party one more time, and then shoves her into a ravine where she lands upon her cousin Brian, who has been beaten up very badly. And Tony comes running down and grabs her and tells her that, asks her what happened, and then runs off to get the police. And then everybody is taken home, and Brian is bandaged up like a mummy.
And Meg goes, "I love that he's worried about me."
I know.
so worried about me.
Meg is very into what Tony is throwing down in this entire book.
Well, is she into him, or is she just like so starved for someone to even ask her how she is?
She's got self-esteem issues for sure.
Yeah.
And I think she's a little into Tony's damage.
Makes her life interesting.
Yeah, she's like, that's a little spice. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Why is he so bad?
There's something so tragic about, if we're jumping ahead, but just the part of where we are now in Tony's POV, and Tony's like, I think I gotta kill Meg. And meanwhile, Meg is just like, oh, what's going on in that big brain of his? He's so cool. And we'll just like push her off a cliff. We're like, that is actually kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
It's
pretty realistic to life, where you're like, oh, you could be thinking about anything, and that other person's over there being like, I could take her to Lover's Leap, and I could make her leap.
Let's get to Lover's Leap. So we go to Brian's plantation, and we see Brian and Corey and David are leaving from the last book, are leaving as Meg shows up, and Meg goes, how's Brian? And as they're like running away from the building, they go, not good. Meg ends up talking to Brian, and he ends up babbling on about the wizard knowing tricks that warriors do not know.
He's firmly RPing during this. He does not break character.
Yep. And he says something along the lines of, I did it, with no real context surrounding what that means for Meg.
Mm-hmm.
And then she leaves pretty much instantly and is like, he's been the one who's been threatening me, I think. I gotta talk to Tony about this.
Mm-hmm. So she calls Tony, and Tony is like, what'd he say to you? And he's acting incredibly suspicious.
Yeah. No chill whatsoever.
No chill.
And she's like, I know. Meg knows. I'm Meg, and I know.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the farce. The sad farce. Not the farce.
It is a farce. It is a farce. It's a comedy of errors at this point.
Yeah.
And Tony's like, great. Well, now that you know, I have to kill you. I mean, let's go make out at the party. I mean, let's make out at a place that's far away from the party that has a precipitous drop and a really slippery edge.
Yeah. She's like, isn't that Lover's Leap? He's like, don't worry, I'll take care of you. Come on. Come on, young teenagers.
Understand double entendre, Meg.
She's like, I love that he's taking care of me.
Not much else happens at this point. I think it's pretty much, there are multiple scenes with Ellen, Shannon, and Meg hanging out, talking about each other's clothes and how they great they look. They set up the surprise party.
Well, can I just say, Paul, I'm gonna cut you off. I think way too late in the book, finally they invite Ellen to the surprise party, which just feels like you got to get her schedule saved. You're doing all of this. You don't know. Maybe Ellen has something that night, and then you're all out of luck.
She's only in town for a month.
Yeah. Like ahead of time, be like, hey, Ellen, save Saturday night. I want to take you to something. Don't worry about it. But instead, you gotta do your invitation first. That's all I'm saying.
I agree, Chad.
So before we get to the surprise party, we got to go to David's party.
Oh, my God. I forgot about David's party. David's party. Oh, so this is... this is where the kids are making out everywhere. Basketballs are flying at people's heads.
Yep.
Corey does a handstand and all his change falls out of his pockets.
Kids are wilding.
Except for Dwayne. Dwayne is acting bad at this party.
Dwayne sucks. Dwayne's a sex pest and he's bad. And he's bothering Shannon.
Mm-hmm.
Shannon's like, you know, doing her best. And Meg does a good friend thing.
Yeah, and Shannon... it dismisses it and is like, I can handle myself, when clearly she could not.
Like, Shannon, all due respect, you can handle that, but you can't handle me asking you a few questions about my thing that's happening.
Yeah.
It's like, why does that not set you off into a blind rage?
Uh-huh.
Maybe you got angry at me because it's safe. That doesn't make me feel good, Shannon.
Damn. Oh, no.
Just some thoughts for Shannon.
I like, this is going to be a good insight into Kevin's psyche on this episode.
Yeah.
I know everything about people, especially fictional teenagers.
What else happens at the party? I can't quite remember.
Dwayne's a super creep.
Yeah,
right?
Dwayne's a super creep, even though he has beautiful muscles and gross shirts. I was picturing Pit Stain from Pete and Pete.
Yeah, it was pretty nasty.
That's good.
Well, I was so thrown because I read him as like a big muscular Biff Tannen.
Yeah.
But then he also plays Wizards and Dragons. So I was like, or Wizards and Dungeons.
You're always thinking of Biff Tannen.
He's a great archetype.
I think, in my mind, he looked like Rocky in Rocky 1 after he runs.
Okay.
Stains, egg running down the front of his gray sweatshirt.
Bit of a pump on.
Yeah, the guy, he's pumped. He's looking good, but the clothes are not working.
But that guy playing tabletop with a kid who refers to himself as a wizard in real life, like, I would, I want to watch that. I'll watch that entire Let's Play.
That's not what they're doing. Dwayne is just, Dwayne is probably just beating the shit out of Brian.
Wait, you don't think they're playing? You don't think they're rolling dice?
No. Dwayne doesn't do, Dwayne does not do short math and keep like character continuity in it.
This is why I think it's LARPing. I think they're just, in the woods running around, throwing sandbags at each other.
Yeah, then there's some physical activity for Dwayne. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Dwayne is not a gamer. He violates the gamer code.
I was going to say, not to step back before this, but there was a really, really weird scene where Tony is walking back to his house in the rain and just comes across Dwayne shooting baskets in the rain.
Yeah.
And they have this really weird heated exchange between them that I didn't quite understand.
It makes no sense.
Tony comes up to him and steals the ball from him, and they start like riffing with each other, like kind of making fun of each other. And you're like, oh, they're friends. And then Dwayne just starts calling him a dweeb and like attacking him, and Tony runs off in fear. It's a weird, weird scene.
Well, Tony runs off because Dwayne says that he's glad that Evan's dead, because it means he can go after his sister.
Yeah, it really hurt his feelings.
That's right. He tries to Houdini him with the basketball too.
Couldn't you see this so much though? Like, I know this makes no sense, but if you told me this was shot like One Tree Hill, and it was just these two muscular guys just playing basketball at night,
a soft focus.
Yeah, the basketball being a metaphor for their dynamic as they bounce back and forth. Oh man,
Tony is never physically described,
unlike everybody else. Yeah.
Well, that scene, I was like, it seems like Tony's also a kind of a jock, but
and strong, because he hurts Dwayne.
Tony is like Hammerhead from Spider-Man.
Okay,
just I'm gonna Google just that. big muscular mobster dude. Like, I don't know, that's how I saw him,
with a flat head.
Flathead and just headbutting things. That's how he hurts people. That's how I saw him.
Well, Tony, we know that Tony has a lovely leather jacket that he will not lend to his girlfriend that he's trying to kill.
Which, Chad, I think makes him more of a Tombstone if we're staying in Spider-Man villains.
I like Tombstone. Yeah, more up-to-date Spider-Man. I like that. Yeah.
He is described as pale.
Once again, Tombstone.
Tombstone,
So Tony takes Meg away from David's party that they really just did one kind of loop at, and they go to Lover's Leap, and Meg's like, ooh, I'm a little cold, can I borrow your jacket? And Tony's like, no, I don't want to lose this jacket.
and then he pries it from her, what Brian told her. She tells him that Brian basically told her nothing, and he's like, oh,
yeah,
she doesn't know that I killed my best friend.
Yeah.
I should kill her. I'm not going to kill her. Actually, no. If I kill her, then Brian and Ellen will be scared. It would be good to kill again. I should kill again.
Also, dude, everyone just saw you leave the David's party with your girlfriend. Like, that's, you know, you're not covering your tracks real good there.
He's not a good murderer for a very good reason, which we find out later.
What would his cover story be? That they were just banging it out near the edge?
I guess, and they slipped on a rock?
Fell?
Yeah, we tried to do a special move over the incline.
We were trying to do standing 69, and then she slipped. And
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Actually, all the more reason to get. Wouldn't it be better to give her your jacket, unless you're going to try to? There's no way Tony does this, kills her, and then doesn't.
It's a really nice jacket, though.
It's evidence too. Like, if his plan was to just leave and be like, "I don't know where she is," then you don't want her wearing the jacket, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think that entire lie of Tony not being involved wouldn't fly. I like that we're also spending a lot of time laying out how would we kill this teenage girl.
Well, it's not hard.
I think you got to be like, I'm with them. I'm involved in the death, but it's an accidental death. That's the play you got to do. Mm-hmm. You're like, I was with her and we were kissing and we were so passionate that we lost balance and then she fell.
It's some sort of acrobatic sex move, because then the cops will be like, you're kind of cool that you tried that.
The cop's like, I can never get the angle right when you're standing.
No, I totally get it, kid. My wife slips all the time.
Just picturing the cop in the crime scene with like lights flashing everywhere, going, "You're pretty cool."
Cop just says, "Nice,
nice,
pretty, all right. Let me take you home. Do you want to stop anywhere else on the way?"
I spit out my drink all over my table, Paul. That's how good that was.
The whole like Tony flip scene ends with something I find very funny, which is Tony thinks about his dad's gun, which takes shotgun shells for some reason.
Like a pirate gun or some shit.
Yeah.
Like...
Blunderbuss.
He's he's like my dad's pistol, which takes shells. It's like, no, that's not what. Okay, but I've played Doom, guys. Like we know this. Like they're not called shells for your pistol, unless it's a pistol that shoots shotgun shells. Which
yeah, maybe it's like a custom made gun,
which sounds like a Doom gun.
It's like a little blunderbuss.
Yeah.
But Meg's like, hey, hot stuff, ain't you gonna kiss me? And Tony's like, oh, yeah, right. And he kisses his girlfriend while thinking about his dad's gun.
Yeah, that's an insane chapter end. I really stuck with that.
Even if Tony didn't do it, which we'll find out soon, he's still fucked up and he's got to get some help.
But yeah, he needs a lot of help.
Now, listener, you might be thinking, how the hell did Tony not do it?
Listen, you might be thinking to yourself, what's going on here? Who are these people?
Well, the surprise party rolls around. Ellen is briefly horrified when she's surprised, but she's not really a character, despite being a big part of this last chunk of the book.
Yeah. And everyone at the surprise party goes, trauma, 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 as they all run at her.
Dwayne sucks and is a sex pest.
Yes.
Brian shows up and turns the whole party on its head by being like, I am a fourth level wizard and I shall now bring Evan back from the dead. And Tony's like, no, no.
It's absolutely crazy. The door opens up. Evan appears within the door and Tony's so like, goofy. I killed him and just screams it for some reason.
Yeah, just confesses it. Yeah.
And then the chapter.
He's got his dad's blunderbuss.
Blunderbuss pistol.
Like sawed off blunderbuss.
Mm-hmm. Pulls it out from his cool jacket that he will never lend to anybody.
Yeah. Not even his dying girlfriend that he's
it's like a Michael Jackson jacket, right? It's like
it's the bad jacket
leather
for
jacket.
Sure.
Yeah.
The lights go out.
Mm-hmm.
Dwayne kicks the gun somehow out of Tony's hand and shoots him in the shoulder. Now Dwayne has the gun. And Dwayne's like, I killed Evan, you idiots. And everyone's like, what? So he takes Ellen and Meg below into the basement because no one will look for them in the basement. They'll all be searching the woods.
Yeah, so he's got weird. A double hostage situation, which I think hard to do.
Very hard to handle. And I love that his idea is what you said, Kevin, to go into the basement because no one will think to look there, even though they walked through a crowded party down to the basement with the two girls at gunpoint.
Yep.
When this happened,
yeah,
go on.
Literally screamed out loud. This sucks. It's so enraging.
I stood up and I said, what?
Yeah, Kevin, the book literally moved you.
I was
out of
moved
your chair.
By this fiction.
Yeah.
It's absurd.
We learn, because Ellen's in a talking mood right about now. We learn Ellen and Tony were actually a thing, and Evan found out and went to the woods with a gun. So Ellen and Tony are like, well, he's really going to want to talk to us as a unit, so
we
better
go together.
Yeah, for sure.
It'll be the adult thing to do is talk to him as a couple.
Yeah, and Tony and Evan have another scuffle. The gun goes off. And Tony is like, oh, no, I've killed. And Brian shows up and is like, hey, guys, what's going on? And they're like, Brian, you saw everything, right? And Brian's like, I'm just walking through these woods, guys. I don't know if I'm like, nope, Brian, you saw everything. You're a part of this now.
Brian goes, let me roll a deception check.
Yep.
He rolls a one and he is a part of the blood pact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tony threatens everyone's lives, and they all walk away from the body. Guess who else is in the woods? None other than Mr. Dwayne.
Yes.
Who shows up creepily out of the mist and is like, what's this? The corpse of my rival? No, not yet dead. Still warm. He puts his ear up to his mouth to feel his breath and is like, ah, I'll kill him with a rock. No one will ever know.
He uses the gun that went off to shoot him anyway, because everyone thinks that he already shot himself. This is a loose tendril from a Shakespeare play that Shakespeare discarded hundreds of years ago, and somehow,
yeah,
somehow R.L. Stine took it and grafted it onto his story.
It'd be like at the end of Romeo and Juliet if, like, Mercutio, that's the only other character I can remember, came by and saw them dead, and it was like, oh, but they're actually not dead. They probably want to be dead.
Let me just kill them.
I'm gonna strangle them. Yeah, let me just run them through with my sword. But it's a gun with sword written on the side, like Romeo plus Juliet.
The thing is, like, the Ellen and Tony thing is already a pretty good twist,
right?
It kind of already ties everything together. And if that's all it was, I honestly would have been like, you know what? That's not super surprising. But at least all came together. And then the Dwayne thing is fucking insane.
Yeah, because, like, the whole time we're all thinking Tony, right? Like, we're like, Tony did this. And yeah, then we find out that Tony did, quote unquote, do it. And then you're like, all right, how are you going to surprise me a little bit? The Ellen twist, like you said, is kind of like, because the whole time I'm reading this, I'm like, all right, so Ellen was there when, because we know that Tony killed him, right? We've been in Tony's mind.
Yeah.
And he knows this.
Yeah.
Tony believes he killed him. Yes.
Yeah. What's the motive for Tony killing Evan?
And what's the motive for Ellen to not say anything, even when she's asking constantly? She's asking Meg, "Are you still dating Tony?" This incredibly loaded question she keeps asking, and you're like, "Why is she? What is the deal with this?" And if you found this out at the end, like you said, Kyle, I would have been like, "Okay, cool, that's fine. Like, I'm not gonna be mad at it, but I'm not gonna be impressed." But then this is just this is just absurdity. It's just, you know what this is? This book is the Telltale Heart, but instead of people doing the murder, nobody did the murder, and everybody just has social anxiety and they think they did the murder somehow.
And by the way, Meg's response to "my best friend and my boyfriend cheated on me behind my back, also my boyfriend is thought he was a murderer
and lived
her response to that is, "No wonder he's been depressed."
Yeah, she has no issue.
She's like, "Wowie zowie."
She's almost too.
That's how we do it on Fear Street.
I think she might be too empathetic, guys.
I don't think that's empathy.
Yeah, that's something is like closed off in you in that point.
Okay, it's an innie empathy. It's like an Audi empathy. It's like reverse empathy in a way.
I think she's thinking, do you think I still have to do my psych paper? If
Is this like kind of when your roommate dies in college and you get all A's for the semester?
It's got to be like that.
I think Meg is thinking in this moment, did anyone notice that I used silver markers for the invitations? Because I really...
I worked hard on those.
I worked really hard.
Did she even redo them? Because they got cut up.
They got ripped up.
It's hard to root for Meg.
Yeah.
She is such a mess.
It's this whole, like, the back half of this book. I was like, oh, Meg seems okay. She's innocent. And then the whole back half of this book, you're like, God, what is wrong with you?
Meg, you have major problems.
Yeah.
It's almost like a Fargo type situation that we're dealing with here. Except people aren't even, like, dim-witted enough to be, like, likable because of their dim-wittedness.
Yeah.
They should all know better is what I'm trying to say.
Shame on them all.
Shame on them shame all. On them shame all. On this book and shame on them all.
As Wendy Williams says, death to all of them.
Yeah, okay.
Meg says to Ellen, whispers, "Fastball special."
Nice.
Hell yeah.
And they do their classic team-up attack where Ellen grabs Meg as a ball in one arm and then hucks her at Dwayne.
This really happens, dear listener. If you don't believe us, read the book.
Megan unsheaths her adamantium claws and cuts off Dwayne's head.
Yeah. Read the book.
And then grabs a frying pan and hits Dwayne over the head.
That part's true.
It's better that you think it's that, listener. It's better that you think it's that. So Dwayne being defeated, they take the gun away from him, and Ellen says, "Man, you sure know how to throw a party." And for some reason, Meg does not say, "Bitch, you stole my boyfriend."
Yeah. No, they're still best friends.
Wouldn't there also been something kind of like, I know they wouldn't, but wouldn't there have been something sort of poetic about seeing knocked out Dwayne on the ground and going like, "Well, let's just shoot him."
Yeah.
Did it to some, yeah.
Yeah. Tidy it up.
Double tap.
You're not Batman. Shoot that guy.
And then we have our denouement. Our denouement is simply We're back in Mike, the kid who looks like Evan's room. And for a split second, I was like, who the fuck is Mike?
Yeah.
And then I remembered that it's Shannon's brother who looks like Evan. They're sticking his stinky clothes into a thing so that he can leave to go back to school. And we get another party's joke, and that's about it.
And Tony's just out there.
Yes, Tony's like out there, I think, maybe gonna go to an institute or something. But
they imply he's getting some help, yeah.
There's definitely a strong implication that Meg is going to date Mike.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yes, there is.
This is just like the end of the first book where it's like, well, these two heterosexual teens need to get together.
The two somehow least worst people in this book are going to get together. That's the only that you have to. It was a farce, so some people have to get married at the end, right?
Mike's sure. Only the least worst person because he does nothing but walk through a door.
What does Mike know about this party, by the way? Mike is being contacted by Brian, who he has some sort of relationship with, but doesn't sound like that strong. Does Mike know that, hey, you're going to come into this party and we are going to scare Ellen and make her think that...
He does know because Shannon went to Brian while Brian was bedridden, and Shannon and Brian planned the whole thing.
To get them to confess, I guess?
Yeah. And they're like, listen, what you're going to do is, Mike, you're going to walk through the door after Brian says his wizard garbage. And then Tony is going to pull out his father's gun. Then the power is going to cut out. Then Dwayne is going to take that gun. And then Dwayne, the truth will out, is what we're saying.
And then we will fastball special him.
Tony's being hit not just with the fact that Evan's back from the dead, but magic's real.
Yeah, that's tough.
It's a lot to deal with, but when you're young and you figure out that magic's real, then it's a lot better.
I think Mike was probably just like, yeah, whatever, I'll scare some teens. Yeah. Is there beer? Like, fuck it. Can I drink in the closet? Okay.
I just gotta walk through a doorway.
You know what I gotta say? Meg's party? Pretty cool.
A pretty good party.
Pretty good party.
Some good stuff happened there.
Worth dying over.
Yeah. Best one they've been to. I am pretty upset that there was never any scene where we followed Meg to like a party store. Just kind of got to see, because I don't really know what the theme was or like what the kind of, it really was like. I felt like RL once again was really doing some literature, as you were saying, really doing some solid description of locations, and then we get to the party. I'm like, well, what the fuck is, what did that look like? Paint a picture, bud.
My lingering question is, apparently Meg got permission to use this abandoned house to have an absolute rager of a party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who was the adult that was just like, yeah, you teens can have an unsupervised party in the woods?
It's her dad, right? That guy just kind of wants to be left alone. Like, he's just sort of, yeah, all right, yeah, use the house.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, just don't mess up my den.
Maybe we'll learn more about the property rights in Fear Street later books, but I'm kind of wondering if just, like, all of Fear Street is just sort of, like, public grounds. You either own a house or there's just like, hey, yeah, we got like a haunted,
it kind of feels like it's a park
swing if you need park. We got like a roller rink if you need a haunted roller rink. Like, ooh, we got everything here at Fear Street.
There's a cool graveyard.
Well, Kyle, how is Fear Street in your opinion?
It was too real, if I'm honest.
That's what I'm saying.
Too real for me.
That's what I'm saying. Put a ghost in there, not a gun.
It really needed a Jason. It needed it needed something, or it needed Tony. I wish Tony had just had a straight up split personality that maybe called himself something else. I would have loved that.
Or an alien clone, or a wizard duplicate. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, a doppelganger,
a golem.
Yeah.
The only interest in some of this book really was when the book would jump to Tony or the killer's POV as he's like considering murder, running over Meg or pushing.
Well, he blacks out during the car thing.
Yeah. That's right. No, he really he's like a dissociative disorder sort of thing. And like, that is not to stigmatize mental illness, but that is scary in that like, oh, these people are in danger because Tony is not getting the help he needs.
Well, RL is certainly ready to stigmatize mental illness.
Absolutely.
And poverty.
And cats.
He's also definitely, I was avoiding saying this, but RL's definitely trying to insinuate that Meg has a learning disability, right?
What? Why?
She like can't focus on her work. She can't get it done. She's getting extensions. She can't put together all these simple clues. Like,
you're saying she has ADD, basically.
At minimum, yeah.
At minimum, yeah. Okay.
They didn't know what that was back then in the 90s, yeah. Right?
Yeah, I don't think so.
They just called it fast think.
What?
Yeah, your brain's not going the speed limit there.
Slow down. That's been a street. Kyle, did you at least have fun reading it, or was it, you know, did you enjoy yourself in any way?
No, honestly, I was enjoying it. I read it in one sitting,
mm-hmm.
and so it definitely drove me to the end. And I think when they finally revealed the Tony thing, I was at least like invested to the bitter end.
Uh-huh.
So no, it was fun. I definitely wanted spooks, but
this'll do.
It was good. I'll settle for teens.
Came for spooks, settled for teens.
Traitorous teens.
Damn those traitors.
We tried real hard to find any sort of book that was going to cross over with what you do on your podcast, Kyle. Well, you have multiple podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
LOLJK and Yesterday's Tomorrow Today. Would you like to talk about a little about them? Long story short, we couldn't find any Goosebumps book that covers the topics you do.
No.
So maybe you can explain a little bit, like, listeners, why they should check out your show.
Oh, a nice little plug right here. Thank you.
Yeah.
If you enjoyed my sultry voice at all, invading your podcast, I have two other podcasts. One that we're almost finishing our first season of, called Yesterday's Tomorrow Today, in which we only talk about movies that take place in futures that have already happened.
It's beautiful.
Nice.
Beautiful idea.
We talk about Back to the Future 2 because it happens in 2015,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. So, and we also don't really talk about the movies. We just talk about the dumb futures.
Yeah. a past idea of what the future will be that we are already living.
Yeah.
Correct?
Like, we actually had Chad on to do The Purge, which I believe took place in 2022 and felt too real.
Yep.
But it's really fun. I would love for y'all to check it out. And I have a podcast called LOLJK, which we've been doing for like a decade. And it's just us talking about dumb shit like people marrying ghosts and weird animal genitals and things of that nature.
The good stuff.
It's really like a potpourri podcast. Is that fair to say? Like a grab bag.
It's a grab bag. I would say that you're showing up for the camaraderie and the chemistry and the bits.
Those are the best kinds of shows.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Not for here. You come here for hard-hitting critiques. That's what you do at Goosebuds.
Yeah.
It's what I love the most about this.
Boom. We're not like other podcasts.
We're different. You remove your paint-stained overalls. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
you're a beautiful podcast.
Take my glasses off.
The glasses,
oh my god,
I like that movie.
Yeah, check out Kyle's podcast. Yeah, Yesterday's Tomorrow Today is a great idea for a podcast. I think that's a brilliant idea.
Thank you. It's very specific.
Yeah. Otherwise, if you want to check out our podcast, you're doing that. Hello, welcome. You did it. But if you want more of that, you could go to our patreon.com/goosebuds, where not only are you pledging your support for the show lets us make the show, but you get access to bonus Camp Goosebud episodes. We put out one every month, and at this point, if you subscribe, there's like dozens upon dozens of Camp Goosebud episodes. It's all banter. It's all us just hanging out around the digital campfire, kind of like LOLJK, and just making each other laugh.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
patreon.com/goosebuds.
I solve all kinds of fears on that one.
You do.
It's true. It solves my fear.
Kevin, I think you got somebody you want to
hi check. Yes. My name is Kevin. I've been this voice. If you liked all of my webs and lies, then you might enjoy my other podcast, Pretend Friends, which is a actual play RPG system where we actually play my RPG, the one I wrote and developed with my friends, Space Kings.
Kyle's played it.
I played that system. It's a good system.
It's a good
one. Nice. That's awesome. Do you remember what your character was?
What was mine?
Oh my god, are you asking your DM what your character was? Your character was a caveman who had discovered technology and I think a time machine.
Oh, he was taken to on board an alien ship to a zoo and kept alive and then came back. But then before then, I think we played another game where my guy was like some sort of fucked up archer. I just remember he killed a child by shooting an arrow up someone's butthole.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a big character I had a lot of plans for, and Kyle just split them in twain.
Nice.
It was a group effort.
If that sounds fun and silly to you, you might like Pretend Friends, the podcast I do with Paul and occasionally Chad. Mm-hmm. And you might like the Space Kings system, which is available now at spacekings.space, and as a delicious hardcover full-color book at book.spacekings.space. And I also do other things. If you've been listening to me for a while and you like my stuff and you want to support my work, you can join my Patreon at givekevinmoney.com. And you can follow along some other tabletop projects I'm working on and some other secret projects and some video games that I made. So, yeah, those are my things, I think.
I should do more stuff.
I do too many things, and I apologize. I have too many URLs.
Never apologize for being so prolific.
I got to justify all of the thousands of dollars I spend on funny URLs by doing many, many things.
GiveKevinMoney.com.
GiveKevinMoney.com. Help me pay for URLs.
Paul, you got anything you want to share the good news? You did a great golf episode.
Nah, I'm good.
Continue.
Paul, you want to continue show?
Nah, I'm good.
You want to continue show a little bit, though?
That's okay. I'm good. Paul? I'm good.
All right.
Pass.
Chad and I might go continue show if you don't want to continue show.
Yeah, I'm gonna go check out continue show on YouTube.
You can do whatever the hell you want.
Funniest commentary on video games I've ever seen.
I'm turning a corner into fear solving now, guys. I'm over that. Got fears to deal with.
Decades of work and you're solving. Okay, that's good.
Hey, if you have any fears you need Paul to solve, why don't you subscribe to our Patreon and message Paul.
he will solve your fear for
1 month's patron. He will
send
solve
a photo, your location, a list of all of your fears.
Solve. Allergies,
passwords, social security number.
You give us all rights to sell them to anybody that we want.
Yeah. But the good news is you won't be afraid anymore.
And that's worth everything.
Kyle, thank you again for joining us. I'm sorry this was such a back and forth, both milquetoast and also got a little spicy points in it. But
it was wild at the end. What are you talking about? That was crazy.
It got wild at the end.
It was a spicy milk for sure. It was like a chocolate milk, but with sriracha instead of.
Ooh, yeah. But just like the chunks were down at the bottom, so you didn't get it until the end of the shake.
A spoonful of chili crisp was dumped into the chocolate milk and you get it all at the end.
I would drink that.
Me too, actually. Sure. It kind of sounds
good.
Actually
sounds pretty good.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Drink it fast before the crisp doesn't crisp anymore. Well, goodbye.
See you next time. Love you. Bye.
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 This episode of Goosebuds is brought to you by our wonderful Patreon supporters, especially those highestly vaulted in the Book of Names.
The Book of Names.
Starting with Stefan Jive Turkey Kuwabara.
Hollis Hornbeak.
Lowbelly Hate Me.
Nathan Dolezal.
Mike Lanteri.
Mickey C.
Michael McDowell.
Hey Josh Rob.
Cameron Murphy Audio.
Buddy Morrill.
Mel Dipson.
Ailcate.
Afshin.
Dango Twist.
Zenta Bumps.
Oh,
it changed.
Stealth Bates.
Robert Moon.
Brian Wells.
Jason Crooker.
Miguel Pardo.
John Keaty.
Clay Castle.
Galf.
The Juggalobalist.
Slink demands paranoia shop content. Of course you would, Slink. You Slink demon. Move. You demon monster coming for my dad's junk.
Gregory D. Warren.
Cody Redfield.
Bradford Coulter.
Aiden pledges their hammer to Dwarf Daddy Kevin. Thank you, Dwarven Child.
Jar-Jar Slinks.
Chosen One.
Levi Than.
Up and Champ.
Jonas Engman.
The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
Thank you.
Carl.
Anthony Mulberry.
Yanni Markovina.
Elusive Koala.
Shrew Applegate.
Christian Vanskever.
Brooke X.
Jesus Christ.
Jeremy Lowe.
Brian Hobgood.
Zach Connor.
Patreon _ donator, yo.
Joe Spooky Digital Ghost Tierney.
Tom Whittam.
Lord Cornwallis.
Andrew Jadzik contributes for approval some Ice Church Schism faction names, like Methodicists, Frostbitarians, and Coldfolix.
I like Frostbitarians because it's not even like a pun.
Yeah. Presbyterians is like the winner.
It's a real Presbyterian way to go about it, if you ask me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Murphy P.
Carson Birkenbean.
It was pre-got.
No, I get it.
Devin Ticklebean met an apple man? Oh, no. What?
You know what? I'm hooked into that story. Tell me more.
Terrified of the apple man.
It's just we've gone so long without a chapter update in the story of Tevin Ticklebean, and now we get this dramatic reveal.
Where did they end up?
I don't know. I think also the fact that Appleman's not capitalized, but Tevin Ticklebean does, makes it Appleman more insidious.
It implies there are many Apple men.
Sean Minogue.
Rushy Glenn.
Wiggle It.
Alicia Grafe.
Luke LaFontaine.
Matt McClellan.
Chip Handsome.
Tanya Turtle.
Juan Jalapena.
Timothy Misodilakis.
Keith Hellcrow.
Jonas Blatterman.
Clay McCarty.
Parker Lee.
Ham underscore boat.
The Crow Fence, but seasonal.
Ooh, pumpkin spiced. Raymond Hernandez.
Matthew Sutton.
Jeffrey Owen Cahy.
Kelsey Kinneman.
Russell Castberg.
Xavier Jimenez Castillo.
Ooh, Scotty Pippen.
Joe, regular name, Scott.
Chris Putrikis.
Alex Boone, the robotic dog.
Flamily.
Dungeon Kappa.
Tobias Clark.
Zach Ware.
Lip Duck.
Ice Acolyte Hamster turns his cup of ice lava down.
No.
It'll be ice.
Yes.
Meet Virginia.
Luke Noodles.
Zambambino.
Hugh Boland.
Estamina, Lord of Paul's Pants.
Nathan Remick.
Chris, Spooky Gym Shorts and a 4XL t-shirt, Stiffy Nelson.
That's a big stiffy if it's 4XL.
Got a flagpole in there?
God damn, dude. Maybe you should talk to a doctor about that.
It's a big dog shirt. We all know it's a big dog
it's
shirt.
It's a big dog shirt. It's a TC Tuggers. Need more kimchi.
Putting a different meaning to the term TC Tugger.
TC Tuggers. It's not a joke shirt.
Streak?
Lee Wood.
Reed Stubendick.
Kieran McNamara.
Diet Soda.
Lamb, the aspiring demon lord of friendship.
Aww.
Joey Evans.
Jackie Ledoux.
Coleman Laguza.
Tacky Tammy.
Carewise Gamgee.
A pair of Scots.
Levi Kidder.
I had a foursome this summer. I don't want to tell my parents, but I would like someone to tell me they're proud of me.
Good job.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty sick, I guess.
Gotta stay hydrated, and I bet there's a whole spreadsheet you gotta fill out.
Hoped you wrapped everything tight, you know.
You got a lot of consent there, which is cool.
Yeah.
Three other people said, yes, be naked near me. And that's pretty cool.
Impressive.
You could probably tell your parents.
David Gray.
Cameron Hansen.
A wild, swaggy Yolo Squire appears.
Throw a ball at it. Matthew Brittato.
Bryce Deary.
The Deadly Bold.
I am Cornholio. I need TP for my bunghole.
Generally depressing.
Lava Church is launching a magma missile at Ice Church. You have 24 hours to evacuate.
What the fuck? What the? No, no, guys, you're in Ice Church.
Yes.
You better start getting some cold stuff together because we have a lot of lava heading towards Ice Church.
We gotta build a snow fort right now.
Listen, my Ice Church persona is just a guy who's like down for whatever. He's always gonna say yes like a total creepo.
He's Joker-fied, is what you're saying?
Yeah, he's Joker-pilled and boner-fied.
I feel like I'm the only one trying to keep Ice Church frozen, and it's really troubling.
Melt the ice. Melt the ice.
Boney!
Ben Bohan.
Jonas N. Voldsen.
Some of Chad's bird friends who now live in the rafters at Ice Church. Aw, but they can come down whenever they want.
Joe Gorman.
Burgers Herb Return Group. Burgers Overturned Cup. Boiling, free the entity.
No!
Yes!
Nicholas Maloney.
Anthony forgot to make a funny name this month.
Don't worry, he still did.
You'll get it next time, Anthony. Tiffany Lee.
Eric Horwitz.
Thomas Jansis.
Mutant. Still thinking about Burgers Overturned Cup.
Burger,
stop laughing at how stupid I said that. Mutant Astronaut.
Lucretia MacEvil.
Germ Juice.
Calamity Carl.
Nick Johnson.
Henry Torbert.
Boner Guard Epsilon Hamilton, a.k.a. Hambone, host of Radio Bone Air.
That's so many titles. Adam Knapp.
Ryan Carroll.
Logan Derby.
Jeremy Bowser.
Chick.
Brad Schmelzer.
Megan McCormick Mason.
Callum Mr. Misfire West.
Skeletorin.
Ninja Breadman.
Mandy Nasty.
Yoplin.
Helodicus Ferenchlin.
Aaron Lord.
Philip Reynolds.
Dr. Chuck.
Nate Bit G.
Mr. Unimportant wants to know if you can pee on the ice church floor.
Yes.
It depends.
Yeah.
Pee freely.
You know what? I'll say yes, knowing that it's going to overall contribute more to the ice. I will say that.
It's not quite the lava we're expecting it to be, Kevin.
Nothing more refreshing than a nice cold piss. Scott Wable.
Ryan R. Davis will not step in the piss.
You can pee in regular church.
Robot Arena.
Rocco.
Omegal Bagal, a.k.a. Omegal Bagel, a.k.a. George, a.k.a. Josh.
Congrats on being in the Joe Parra special, Josh. Evdog.
SSJ Trogdor.
Llama Lad.
Greg Musto.
Mike Spaghetti Jones.
Sprinkle Buns.
Hi, first time, long time.
Allie Rose.
Hilda B.
Chris.
The discography of Blues Traveler and inhalation of skunk weed enhances Pauly Shore's piloting of the Gundam Sandrock.
That tracks.
Always saying it.
I understood everything in that sentence.
Me too.
Yup.
Liam Rogers.
Soggy Newspapers.
Ollie Sutz.
My cart.
Kate the Great.
John W.
Dakota Camp.
Chris Kulik.
Saturn Video.
Gulliver.
Cassandra Harris.
Wade Norcross.
Kiwi Blurb.
Serial Killer X.
Oh, that last name was my favorite.
Kira, that was convincing as hell. Kira and Brian are big fans.
And big Nick Lane.
Blake Cavan.
Dan Antonio.
Kit Bush.
Sarah Sin.
You Over the Moon.
Dennis Wright.
Crash Callahan and the Voodoo Death God.
Farah.
Yeah.
CM.
Cameron Ganseveld.
Several upset horses.
Jesse.
Goblin Grater, the thawed one of the one true room temp church emerges.
There's another church?
Splitter.
Matt Septor.
Greg Gervasi, a.k.a. VivaZed.
What's up, Greg?
Cole Gleason.
Chris Gerdo.
This news is scary. I am to marry in February the 14th, that day at 11.
Da-dun. Michael Malloy.
Jesse Boggs.
B.
Anthony Rodriguez.
We forgot to change our Patreon name for a while, but Jeff Webb, Big Baby, and I still appreciate all the ongoing bits in the book. Oh, no.
Oh, no. We don't know what that was going to say. Could it be book? We don't know. S.
Kyle O'Neill.
Alpaca acquaintance turns their cup anti-clockwise.
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
The hottest direction.
Taraku, the thing that goes doink in the anime.
Goonkahoot saw Undertaker at a Walgreens.
Sick, sick.
That is fucking cool. Spencer Y.
Wonder Skin, it feels like real skin.
Tanyerhide, it feels like real hide.
Brony underscore Danza. It's kind of like Tony Danza.
BR Deer.
Anthony Stoker.
Wunderskin. Again.
Wait. Again. Back again. Max Schism Advocate pledges his cup facing upward.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, wait. Yes. I think. Yes.
Doglips underscore Kajoyian.
Chris is struggling to think of a fun name and is open to suggestions. Try Appleman.
Reb Comics.
Paul Sentient My Buddy Doll, a.k.a. the real Mr. Bad Boy.
Yeah.
I'm a bad boy.
Hurt, a.k.a. Cyber Bully.
Talene McKnight got married to Ross, not from Friends, McKnight. Hey, congrats.
Congrats.
Blarbin pours orthogonally. Yes.
I mean, yes. We do. Yes.
Yeah.
Starship 9.
Logan Kilgus.
Girthworm Jim.
Boss Feratu.
Why Paul is leader?
You know why. Proper spaceman.
Smellities.
Angelo Edward Longton Santone.
Canadian Ghoul.
Bacon the Awkwardly Unseen.
R.I.P. Kevin Cole, Baja blasted with a heart cannon by the King of Space.
Thank you, Baja children. Caleb Snyder, Grandmaster of Spells and Enchantments, pledges his wizard staff and ancient tome to Paul.
Goddamn.
Who got a pledge this month? It was me. Lumo Nuba.
Elodie.
Brian Udath.
Sterner Stock.
Kyle Welch.
Clint Deerking.
Agents Miskatonic.
A tall glass of dumb bitch juice.
Nowhere Lucas.
Brian Sika.
Brian Staroe.
C.L. Reagan.
Justin.
Ben Flolios Sayer.
Whew, that was a tough one, Chad.
Did I say that right?
I think you nailed it. Shayna S.
Jaybird.
Gumblegore.
And welcome, Bob Cabbage.
I was really hoping Bob Cabbage would get in here. Hello and well met, jig-ass biddies 007.
Jesus Christ.
Are you playing Halo right now?
Welcome, number one gnome.
And welcome and thank you very much, jolly old Jules.
Say goodbye to your souls, bitches.
Say goodbye to your gamer score.
Thank you all so much. We love you. Have a good time. Enjoy the next episode.
Seriously, you're stuck. You're so stuck right now. You're never leaving.
Yes.
Yeah.
Goodbye forever.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.